Red Dwarf, Season 4, Episode 3. Justice. Lister is in medical bed. His head is swollen to the size and shape of something big and swelled. Crichton wheels in a breakfast trolley.
How are you feeling, sir?
Ah, much better, thanks, man.
You certainly look better. I can't believe how much the swelling has gone down overnight.
You reckon?
Definitely. It was almost interfering with the ceiling fan yesterday afternoon. You're nearly back to your old self. In fact, you can hardly tell you've got space monks at all.
Can I have a mirror?
Crichton takes out an enormous head measuring device.
I don't think you're quite ready for a mirror yet, sir. Let's take it one step at a time.
He measures Lister's head.
What did I tell you? It's gone down 8 inches overnight. You'll be up and about in no time.
I don't know what I would have done without you this last 3 weeks. Florence Nightingale, did you bring me breakfast?
Yes, sir. Hot lager with crumbs, just the way you asked.
Lister lifts the lid of the soup bowl and starts to spoon up the lager.
Well, you certainly find out who your mates are when you've got an unsightly, disfiguring ailment.
Oh, I wouldn't say unsightly, sir.
Oh, come on, Crichton. I've got a head like a hot air balloon. I look like the human light bulb. And how many times have they dropped in with a word of comfort or a bunch of grapes?
It's just not impossible, sir. Mr. Rimmer has been on vacation.
The world's most charismatic man? Where did he go?
On a rambling holiday through the Devil Decks. The 10-day hike through the ship's combustion engine with two of the scuppers. He said he'd pop in later and show you the slides.
He didn't, did he?
He's been loading the projection carousel for 24 hours now.
You've got to stop him. A slideshow of the Devil Decks? That could finish me. I have thought the cat might have dropped him, though.
Well, he's been a little preoccupied of late with this pot business. Oh, screw down my diodes and call me Frank. I wasn't supposed to mention that.
What pod?
Sir, you're not well, just forget I mentioned it.
Come on, what pod?
Yesterday evening we came across an escape pod floating in the local asteroid belt. It contains the survivor of some space crash, apparently cryogenically frozen.
Oh, yeah.
All the signs are she's in suitable condition for revival.
She?
As far as we can tell, she's a she.
Oh, that's great, isn't it? That's just typical. The first female company in 3 million years, and I look like something that belongs up a whale's nose.
Lister gets up.
You can't get up, sir. What are you doing?
There's a woman on board. What do you think I'm doing? I'm not a cop.
In the sleeping quarters, Lister is examining the pod. He reads the name from the side of its outer surface.
Barbara Bellini. What a beautiful name. There's no justice. How could this happen to me?
Pat comes in.
Maybe I could wear a turban and pretend I'm from India.
Maybe you could stick a spike in your head and pretend you're the Taj Mahal.
Oh, it's you. Well, thanks for visiting me. Thanks a lot.
You know what you look like? You could go out double-dating with the Elephant Man, and he would be the looker.
Why isn't it activated? How come no one started the thaw process?
What? I thought Alphabet had did it.
Pat presses a few buttons on the keypad, and lights begin to glow. On the pod, the display reads 29 hours, 59 minutes, 57 seconds to revival and the seconds to countdown.
So who is she? Where did she come from?
Who cares? At last, a date.
Who says she's going to be interested in you?
I see what you're saying. All that time alone in deep space could have driven her insane.
No. Say she's just an ordinary woman who doesn't go for your type.
No. I have heard about her. She have appeared in Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Say she prefers someone else?
Like who?
I don't know. Like me.
Cat smiles.
Buddy, you've got a head like a watermelon. What are you going to do? Paint it with orange and black stripes and tell her you play quarterback with the Bengals?
I just think you're a bit cocky for a guy who's never actually met a real woman before.
I've seen yours. I have eyes. Face it, buddy. I have a body that makes men sweat. Have you ever heard of an animal called the Iranian gerd? It can do 150 pelvic thrusts a second.
So?
That's me in slow-mo. Put a Black and Decker drill on the end, I can make it through walls.
Rimmer enters with Crichton.
Listy, what are you doing up? Shouldn't you be in the greenhouse with the rest of the cantaloupes? Who started the RP?
What's the problem? She's in there. Let's get her out.
The problem, Pussycat Willem, is this capsule was ejected from a prison ship on which the convicts mutinied. There was a pitched battle with only two survivors. One prisoner and one guard. The erstwhile Miss Bellini. One of those two got into this pod and escaped. But, of course, you'll know all this, having familiarized yourself thoroughly with the black box recording.
So, if it's not Bellini in there, who is it?
One of the prisoners. And considering the ship was transporting 40 psychotic, half-crazed, mass-murdering, super-strong androids, we thought it prudent to find out who the snake was in there before we woke them up.
With respect, sir, they're not androids. They're simulants.
What's the difference?
Well, the basic difference is that an android would never rip off a human's head and spit down his neck.
Can we stop it, Carl?
No. One-way process.
Can't we find out who's inside by x-raying the pod?
No. Relining. Can't to survive in space.
There must be some way.
Oh, there is. All you have to do is hang around here for 24 hours. Then, if you suddenly turn around and find your limbs are scattered around deep space and your necks are full of saliva, you can take it as rabbit probably wasn't bad.
Why not tool up with Bazookoid, wait for the pod to open, and if it's one of these badass android dudes, let it eat laser.
Simulants are almost indestructible, sir. It could easily withstand a volley of Bazookoid fire at close range. It would certainly survive long enough to make balloon animals out of your lower intestines.
Well, I see no other option. Let's blast it back into space.
Say it isn't a simulant. We can't just shoot an innocent woman into space.
What a dilemma. Inside that pod is either dead or a date. Personally, I'm prepared to take the risk.
Meanwhile, the pod is defrosting, and we still haven't decided what to do. Any ideas, Polly?
Here's a possibility. The black box contains the coordinates of the penal colony the prison ship was heading for. There are bound to be facilities there to contain any hostile form. If it turns out to be Bellini, we release her. If it's the simulant, we can find him in a cell and leave him to rot.
If the colony's still there, and if it's still operational,
there's an old android saying, which, I believe, has particular relevance here. Goes like this. If you don't close up a program loop, you never get a subroutine.
We have a human saying that means the same thing. Nothing ventured, nothing gained.
I think the android one is punchier.
Starbuck flies from Red Dwarf, heading towards the prison. Head is piloting. Blister is beside him, still with his swollen head.
You have to sit up here.
It's warmer in the front. Seems to help my guns.
I can't see anything. Your head keeps getting in the way of the mirror. In fact, your head keeps on getting in the way of the windscreen.
Rimmer and Crichton are in the rear section, voices muffled.
Next. Ah, now, this one.
In the rear section now, on the screen is a photo of Rimmer in hiking gear, standing next to an incredibly boring piece of machinery with a scutter.
We reached this beauty on the evening of the fourth day. The camera McIntosh 40 valve, air-cooled diesel. The 184. It's almost identical to the 179, but have you noticed the difference? Can you see the refinement in the funnel edgings?
Crichton looks as though he's being tortured.
I thought, we're not going to get another chance to see one of these, so we bivouac down under the fuel pump for the night. There's a funny story about that, which I'll tell you later. But we're not going to get to any of the Class 5s unless we push along. Next.
Sir, can we just take a break for a while? My intelligence circuits appear to have melted.
Well, we're not going to get through them all if we have a second break.
Sir, that's the gamble I'm willing to take.
From the front section we hear a sort of psyche explosion. There is a pause.
Oh my god. Ah, that's better.
Catch Tankerson, covered in yellow slime.
His head burst.
Lister wanders in behind him. His hair is all matted and skin is dangling from his head. He tears off a bit and grins amiably.
Oh, man, that is so much better. I feel great. Talk about the weight off your mind.
I don't want to live. Someone, please, shoot me in the head.
Later, Starbuck is approaching the penal colony space station. The space station looks like a pair of scales, a traditional symbol of law and order, about a mile wide and made out of silvery metal. In the cockpit of Starbuck, everyone is crowded around Lister, who is seated in the drive seat.
Anything down there, Carl?
No life forms, not according to heat scan.
Any mechanical intelligence?
Yes, the mainframe's still operational. Just initiating interface. Hang about. Here we go. Getting a message.
Holly's voice changes to that of the Justice computer.
Welcome to Justice World. Please state your clearance code and prison officer agent.
We're not a prison ship. We don't have a clearance code. We just want to use your facilities.
State life form inventory.
4, 1 hologram, 1 mechanoid, 2 humanoid.
Transfer ship navicom to my jurisdiction.
Lister flips the switch.
On landing, please disembark and proceed through neutral area to the clearance zone.
Starbuck swoops towards the colony. In the corridor on Justice World, Cat, Crichton, Rimmer and Lister walk along. It appears to be a derelict corridor. A sign on the wall reads neutral area.
Until you are granted a clearance code, please observe all security requirements. Your party will be met by a consignment of escort boots.
They exchange glances. From around the corner, four pairs of disembodied boots walk down the corridor towards them. The boots look like metal versions of concrete boots. Electronic lights decorate them. The boots walk up to them and split open.
Please step into the boots.
Lister stands inside one pair of the boots and they close around his feet. The cat steps into his boots.
I'm supposed to wear these? They look like Frankenstein's hand-me-downs. You haven't got anything with a Cuban key or a crepe sole?
I can't use these. I'm a hologram.
That has been accounted for.
Rimmer and Crichton step into their boots.
Now what?
The boots light up, and all four of them lurch forward as the boots escort them down the corridor in a variety of funny walks. They file down the corridor. Each of them pauses under a cone of blue light.
What's this?
Relax, sir. It's just a mind probe.
And the boots lead them on. The clearance zone. The boots escort them into the middle of the room.
What's the mind probe?
The computer was merely searching our minds, presumably for any evidence of criminal activity.
Well, what do you mean, criminal activity?
I shouldn't worry, sir. It's just a routine clearance procedure.
So when you say criminal activity, what exactly do you mean by criminal activity? How criminal do you mean by criminal?
What are you bleeding on about, Lister?
Just define criminal activity for me.
Well, imagine a situation where someone had committed a crime and concealed it from the law. The mind probe would be able to uncover that crime and sentence the person accordingly.
Why didn't nobody tell me about this before we put the smacking boots on?
Oh, Listy. Is that a small sewage plant you're carrying in your trousers, or do I detect you're a tad concerned?
Well, come on, guys. Everyone has done something in their past that's a little bit illegal.
I haven't. I've never so much as got a parking fine.
Yeah, but most people, I mean everyone I knew, are smacking hell.
So what did you do?
Well, I mean, like scrumping. I mean, when I was a kid, back in Liverpool, we all used to go scrumping.
Stealing apples? That's hardly a crime.
Yeah, but me and me mates. We went scrumping for cars.
Did you get caught?
All the time. I was stupid.
Well, that's no problem then. You served your punishment.
Yeah, but there was other stuff as a kid. Stuff I didn't get caught for.
Like what?
There was one time at this hotel.
Oh, lots of people take towels from hotels.
I took the bed. Winched it out of the window to my mate outside. I was renting this flat. It was unfurnished.
So you went to a hotel and stole the bed?
I stole the entire room, actually. Armchair, dressing table, carpet. Even the fitted wardrobe. The only thing I didn't take were the towels. I'm not proud of it.
Absolutely despicable. You are a common thief.
I'm not making excuses, but everyone was doing it. I wasn't strong enough to go against the flow.
Well, I wouldn't like to be in your boots right now, buddy.
What's going to happen to me?
I wouldn't worry about it, sir. I'm sure they're not interested in a minor misdemeanor you committed as an adolescent over 3 million years ago.
Seriously, Crichton? You reckon?
Boy, I'm really getting the hang of this lie mode. That was totally convincing, wasn't it?
The mechanist, Crichton. Clearance granted. You are free to go about the complex.
Crichton's boots release him. He steps free.
The creature known as Cat. Clearance granted.
The cat's boots also release him.
The human known as Lister. Despite a number of petty criminal acts, clearance granted.
Lister closes his eyes. The boots release him.
The hologram known as Rimmer. Guilty of second degree murder. 1,167 counts.
No, there's no mistake, surely.
Each count carries a statutory penalty of 8 years penal servitude. In the light of your hologramatic status, these sentences are to be served consecutively, making a total sentence of 9,328 years.
I've never so much as returned the library book late. Second degree murder. 1,000 people. I would have remembered.
Your willful negligence in failing to reseal a drive plate resulted in the deaths of the entire crew of the Jupiter Mining Corporation vessel the Red Dwarf.
Oh, that.
Sentence to commence immediately.
Rimmer's boots light up and he is brought marched out of the room. Rimmer is still being marched along in his escort boots. He passes under a strange archway bathed in a strange light.
You are now leaving the neutral area and entering the justice zone. Beyond this point, it is impossible to commit any act of injustice.
Help.
Rimmer's apartment on Justice World is a white room, fairly Spartan, but it certainly doesn't look like a prison cell. Bed, table, etc. Rimmer is sitting forlornly on a bed in some futuristic prison garb. Lister comes in.
Hi, killer. 9,000 years. Nine. I brought you a book.
He tosses it on the bed.
Oh, thanks. That will help the centuries fly past.
Look, don't panic, man. We're going to get you out of here.
Why bother? I'll be up for parole in a couple of ice ages.
Crichton reckons you've got right of appeal. He's trying to get a case together. This isn't a bad place for a prison. How come there are no locks or bars or guards or anything?
There doesn't need to be. The whole prison is covered by something called a justice field. I had to sit through this lecture. Apparently it's physically impossible to commit any kind of crime here.
What do you mean?
Try and commit a crime. You'll see.
Like what?
I don't know. Anything. Arson. Try and set fire to those blankets.
Eh?
Just try it.
Lister crosses to the blankets, takes out his Zippo and holds the flame under the blanket. The blanket doesn't ignite, but Lister's jacket starts smoking at the back. Lister doesn't realize.
Whatever crime you try and commit, the consequences happen to you.
I'm not with you.
He feels the heat from the back of his flaming jacket.
Smoking hell.
He takes his jacket off and jumps up and down on it.
Nice example, Rimmer. You couldn't just have explained that to me verbally.
Same with stealing. Same with everything.
With you. So if you nick something, something of yours goes missing.
Right. Try it.
No.
See, it's the perfect system. It forces the inmates to adhere to the law. And when they get out, it's become second nature.
Crichton enters, followed by the cat.
Good news. The justice computer has sanctioned a retrial. I think we have a very strong case.
You do.
It's the question of differentiating between guilt and culpability, sir. What the mind growth detected was your own sense of guilt about the accident. In a way, you tried and convicted yourself. I simply have to establish your neurotic, underachieving emotional retard whose ambition far outstrips his minuscule abilities and who consequently blames himself for an accident for which he could not possibly have been responsible.
You're going to try to prove that I was innocent of negligence on the grounds that I'm a half-witted incompetent.
Man, there ain't a jury in the land that won't buy a plea like that.
Not a half-wit, exactly. More of a buffoon.
Right, I see. But how would you even begin to build such a case? Where would you conjure up the evidence?
Sir, providing I can have completely free access to your personal data files, I think I can come up with the outline of a winning case by lunchtime.
Later, in the clearance zone, Lister and Cat look on. Rimmer is seated in his dress uniform with long service medals. Crichton addresses the court.
The mind probe was created to detect guilt, yet in the case of Arnold Judas Rimmer the guilt it detected attaches to no crime. He held a position of little or no authority on Red Dwarf. He was a lowly grease monkey, a nothing, a piece of student floating in the toilet bowl of life.
Rimmer doesn't know how to react to this.
Yet he could never come to terms with a lifetime of underachievement. His absurdly inflated ego would never permit it. He's like the security guard on the front gate who considers himself head of the corporation. So, when the crew were wiped out by a nuclear accident, Arnold Rimmer accepted the blame. It was his shift, ergo his fault. I ask the court, look at this man. This man who sat and failed his astronavigation exam on no less than 13 occasions. This sad man, this pathetic man, this joke of a man.
Crichton, you're going over the top. The computer will never buy it.
Trust me, sir. My whole case hinges on proving you're a dork.
Understood.
I call my first witness.
Lister crosses to stand, wearing some sort of apology for a tie.
Name?
Hey, Lister.
Occupation?
Bum.
Would you describe the accused as a friend?
Take the fifth.
Answer the question, please. Remember, you're under polygraphic surveillance. Would you describe the accused as a friend?
No, I would describe the accused as a git.
Who would you say, then, is the person who thinks of him most fondly?
Me.
And there are no others who have shared moments of intimacy with him?
Only one. But she's got a puncture.
Objection.
Overruled.
So you wouldn't describe him as a man with a good social life?
He partied less than Rudolph S. He was totally dedicated to his career. He was in charge of Z-Shift, and it occupied his every waking moment.
And what was Z-Shift's most important duty?
Well, we had lots of duties around the ship, but I suppose our most vital responsibility was making sure the vending machine didn't run out of fun-sized munchie bars.
Can you envisage a situation where the lack of honeycomb-centered chocolate bars might be the direct cause of a lethal radiation leak?
Not off the top of my head, no.
I ask the court one key question. Would the Space Corps have allowed this man,
points at Rimmer,
ever to be in a position where he might endanger the ship? A man so petty and small-minded he would while away his evenings sewing name labels onto his ship shoe condoms. A man of such awesome stupidity.
Objection.
Objection overruled.
A man of such awesome stupidity, he even objects to his own defense counsel. an overzealous, trumped-up little squirt.
Objection.
Overruled.
Any confident anti-machine repairman with an Apollyon complex who commanded as much respect and affection from his fellow crew members as Long John Silver's parrot.
Objection.
If you object to your own counsel once more, Mr. Rimmer, you'll be in contempt.
Who would put this man, this joke of a man who couldn't vouch with a used tea bag, in a position of authority where he could wipe out an entire crew? Who? Only a yogurt. This man is not guilty of manslaughter. He's only guilty of being Arnold J. Rimmer. That is his crime. It is also his punishment. Defense rests.
He sits down next to Rimmer and stares fixedly ahead. Rimmer shoots him a little look, not quite sure what to think.
The defendant will stand for the verdict.
Rimmer stands.
In the view of your counsel's eloquent defense, together with the reams of material evidence he submitted on computer card, this court accepts that, in your case, the mind probe is not an adequate method of assessing guilt. It is not possible for you to have committed the crime for which you blame yourself, and you may therefore go free.
Objection.
Sir, what are you objecting to?
I want an apology.
Starbuck. Crichton and Rimmer come up the ramp, followed by Lister and Cat.
Brilliant, Crichton. What can I say? You were brilliant. You even had me believing it. The way you twisted the facts to make them seem to fit that pattern.
Come on, let's get out of here. I don't know what made us want to come to this hellhole in the first place.
I do.
They all look at the pod. It is open. And it's empty.
Can I smell perfume?
The simulant lurches into the doorway from the cockpit area, brandishing a bazookoid and an evil-looking handgun.
I doubt it.
Lister grabs the bazookoid by the door and starts backing out.
Are you by any chance Barbara Bellini? I didn't think so.
The Red Dwarf crew scream from Starbuck and flee down the corridor on Justice World.
To think I caressed his pod.
They leap over the escort boots and run on. The simulant is running along. A pair of escort boots shuffles towards him. He blasts the left one. The right boot turns and starts hopping for its life. The simulant takes careful aim and blasts it in the back of the heel. The crew race under the archway bathed in strange light.
You are now entering the Justice Zone. Beyond this point, it is impossible to commit any acts of injustice.
Lister and Rimmer dash off one way, Cat and Crichton go the other. The simulant is walking along, looking for them.
Hey, my friends, I don't want any trouble. I just launched your spacecraft. Give me the startup code. Look.
He holds up his gun.
I have no weapon.
He throws the gun aside. Rimmer and Lister are on a metal walkway. As the simulant walks under them, Lister has him in his sights.
What are you waiting for? Gloop him.
I can't. He's not armed.
Lister, this isn't a scout meeting. We're not trying to win the best behaved crew flag. Gloop him.
What? In the back?
Of course in the back. It's only a pity he's awake.
You mean you could happily kill him if he was asleep?
I could happily kill him if he was on the job. Gloop him.
It's immoral.
Come on, you wouldn't shoot an unarmed droid. Come out and let's discuss it.
Lister sets aside his gun.
I'm going to talk to him.
The simulant stands, unarmed, as Lister drops in front of him.
You want to talk? Let's talk.
You have no weapon.
No. You have no weapon.
No.
They walk towards each other.
Guess what?
He pulled out a hunting knife.
I lied.
Guess what?
He allowed the pole to slide from the arm of his jacket.
So did I.
But I lied twice.
He pulled out a handgun.
I didn't think of that.
I'm very glad you didn't.
What did you want to talk about?
Your death.
He cocks the gun.
Your imminent death.
The simulant fires at Lister's chest. Lister looks down at his chest. There's no wound. The simulant fires again. Still no wound. And again. No wound. Suddenly three bullet wounds appear in the simulant's chest. He staggers forwards, bewildered. Lister hits the simulant over the head with his pole. Then Lister reels back, dazed and half-conscious, and falls to his knees. The simulant fires again. Another bullet wound appears in the simulant's body, this time in his shoulder. Lister staggers to his feet, swings the club again, sideways, catching the simulant in the midriff, but it's Lister who feels the impact of the blow and flies down the gangway. He is lying in a crumpled heap.
What the smack is going on?
The simulant looks at his gun, casts it aside, staggers a bit, takes out the knife again and hurls it at Lister. The dagger appears in the simulant's chest. He pulls it out, slightly bemused, and hurls it at Lister again. This time, it appears in the simulant's head. Lister grins. Enlightenment spreads over his features. He grabs a nearby bottle and hands it to the staggering simulant.
It does not compute. Error. Malfunction.
It smashes it over Lister's head. The simulant staggers and shakes his head. Lister hands more bottles to the simulant, who smashes them over Lister's head, staggering and growling with each blow. Finally, Lister grabs the simulant's hands, puts them around his neck, and the simulant tries to throttle him, but, obviously, is really strangling himself. Nearly choking to death, he releases his grip and staggers back. Lister takes out an indelible pen and marks a target on his groin. He walks towards the almost beaten simulant, thrusting his groin forward as he goes. The simulant kicks Lister in the groin. Lister stands there, grinning, as the simulant lies backwards and collapses into a defeated heap. The cat runs up brandishing a huge snow shovel.
I've got him, buddy. Leave this to me.
Cat! No!
Better late than never.
Cat raises the shovel high over his head and slams the simulant over the head. The cat laughs triumphantly. Suddenly, the smile freezes on his face and he falls backwards onto the metal floor. Later, back on Red Dwarf, Lister, Rimmer, Crichton and Cat are walking back.
Makes you think, doesn't it? Mankind's history has been one long search for justice. That's what all religions are about. They accept life as being basically unfair but promise everyone will get their just deserts later. Heaven, hell, karma, reincarnation, whatever. Those guys who built the penal colony tried to give some order to the universe by creating the justice field. But when you're living in an environment where justice does exist, there's no free will. That's why in our universe there can never be true, eternal justice. Good things will happen to bad people, and bad things will happen to good people. It's the way it's got to be. Life, by its very nature, has to be cruel, unkind and unfair.
Lister falls down an open manhole cover.
Thank God for that.
Cat puts the lid on, and they walk off. The end.